studied some statistics today. In order to lead us into next issue of statistics, Hapax Legomenon. You see, in the Hapax Legomenon, Amilim HaBodedot, there are two categories. By way of introduction, there are two categories of the Hapax Legomenon. First of all, Hag Urim Sameach. Happy Hanukkah. Or is the Halabi you say Freilich Hanukkah? I don't know. Once you say Freilich only for Purim, they say for Hanukkah too now. So there are two categories of Hapax Legomenon. Hapax Legomenon, an absolute Hapax Legomenon, which means a word that is tested only once. And then you have another type of Hapax Legomenon, which is a non-absolute Hapax Legomenon. It is attested more than once. For instance, the word Azazel. It's tested only in Vayikra, Parashat HaHoremot, which I will discuss too, because I wrote an article on Azazel. Do you know my thesis on Azazel? Oh, this article was received and accepted, and it's in dictionaries and whatever you want. This is a non-absolute Hapax, because I think Azazel is tested maybe three times in the same chapter. So the law, Mofi Apa Machad, it doesn't test it only once. So let us go a little bit to statistics. I know that we are living in a world of statistics, and you know I cannot be so dry about the language, and I know about statistics like I know about ballet dancing. I know very little about it, but some statistics about the Hapax Legomenon. In the word Aleph, we have 23 Hapax. Absolute Hapax. In the word Bet, 19. In the word Gimel, 10. In the word Daled, the words that starts with the letters Aleph, Bet, Gimel, all the alphabet. So Aleph 23, Bet 19, Gimel 10, Daled 10. We will make something out of it later on. Hey 16, Vav 1, Zain 7, Het 15 words, Tet 7 words, Yud 16, Kaf 18, Lamed 7, Mem 25, Nun 12, Samech 16, Ain 21, Pei 17, Tzadik 14, Kuf 10, Resh 17, Sin 11, Shin 17, Taf 13. Taf 13. No, I will give you the statistics, in a minute concerning the Hapax Legomenon. Now, I'm not going to go to the Hapax Legomenon, which are non-absolute, only to the absolute Hapax Legomenon. Now, the statistics goes the following. As many words that you have in a book, you would expect more Hapax Legomenon. Now, they took few studies, for instance, of major works like Shakespeare and so on and so forth. It reaches about one-third about one-third of a bulk of material of Hapax Legomenon. Let's say you have so many words, 1,000 words, in a book, one-third is a Hapax Legomenon. I think I'm going to go into it next week. This is by way introduction. I will discuss the Hapax, and we'll summarize it next week. Now, let me give you some statistics, collected statistics. In the book of Bereshit, you have 1,611 words. As I said, you have 8,000 words in the Tanakh. In the book of Bereshit, you have 20,000 words that are reoccurring all the time. I mean, the totality of the book is 20,600 words. You expect, if it's one-third, you expect to have about 19.81% Hapax Legomenon. But in actuality, I mean 19 words, 19 words, 19% are Hapax, so you have in actuality 8% of Hapax Legomenon. In Exodus, you have...
What do you mean 90%? You said of the different words, one-third you expect.
Yeah.
So how many different words in Bereshit?
No, I'm not speaking of different words. I'm speaking about the whole... Then I'm going to go to different words.
Right, so what's the... We don't know a statistic on that. We don't have a percentage on the grand total of words.
You're in like, the book of Genesis, you have 20,000 words.
I'm expecting one-third to be...
Hapax logomenon.
One-third. So what's the 19%?
Expected hapax. 19.8 words.
A book that size,
you expect 19.8 words. 20 words about.
A different approach to the statistics.
Right.
Based on the size of the book.
Right. Well, what is amazing, you have on the size of the book, you only you have 8 words. In Exodus, you have 16,700. And you expect to have 16 words, 16.7 words, you're only 4 hapax legomenon. 4. In Leviticus, Bevayikra, you have 11, almost 12,000 words. You expect to have 11.49, you have only 7 hapax. In Numbers, 16,000, you expect 15 words, 15.78 words, you have 7. In Deuteronomy, you have 14,000 words. You expect 13.74. You have 10. In Yoshua, very interesting, 10,000 words. You expect 9.6. You have none. No absolute apax legomenon. In Judges, you have 9,884 words. You expect 9.5 words. You have 6. In Shemuel, both, Shemuel Aleph and Shemuel Bet, you have 24,300, you expect 23 words, 23.6, you have only 11. Now, this statistic was based on a bulk of material that was taken from Plutarch and taken from Shakespeare and other people that they, classical and non-classical, and they build on it. In Kings, you have 25,000 words. You expect in Kings... One and two Kings, you expect to have 24.4 hapax, you have 9 hapax. Isaiah, you have 16,000 words, and you expect 16.28, you have only you have 43. That's interesting. Isaiah, 16,000 words, 16,930, almost 17,000, you expect 17 words, you have 43 words. Yirmiyahu, you have 21,000, 22 almost, you expect 21, you have 14. Ezekiel, interesting, you have 18,731, you expect 18 words, you have 21 words. Hosea, you have 2,383 words, you expect 2.2, you have 4. Yoel, you have 957, you expect 0.92, you have 3 words, hapax. For 957, 3 words, hapax. Amos, you have 2,042, you expect 1.6, you have 4. Ovadiah, you have 291, you expect 0.28, you have none. Yonah, 688, you expect 0.66, you have none. Micha, you have 1,000 words, 396, you have 1. Nahum, you have 538, you expect 0.5, you have 1. Habakkuk, very interesting, 671 words, you expect 0.65, you have 2. Zephaniah, you have 767, you expect 0.74, you have none. Haggai, you have 600. You expect 0.5, you have none. Zechariah, you have 3,128, you expect 3, you have 2. Malachi, you have 876, you have only, you have none. Psalms is very interesting. Psalms, you have 19,531. You expect 18.78 words. You have 33 hapax in Psalms. Proverbs. You have 6,915, you expect 6.65, you have 10. Job. Very interesting.
Excuse me, but
I'm speaking about what you call, I'm speaking absolute hapax. One word that never attested again.
The whole
Tanakh. Absolutely. That's the whole point. No, when you're speaking about the hapax, it cannot show in other place. If you're speaking about absolute hapax cannot show in Tehillim and Bereshit. Now in Tehillim, it's amazing to me. In Proverbs, you have 6,915. You expect 6 words, 665, 6 words, 0.65, you have 10 words. Job. You have 8,343 words. You expect 8.2 words. Hapax, 39 hapax. Almost like Ishaya. No, not almost like Ishaya. Ishaya have 20. How many words you have in Isaiah? Ishaya? 16,000 in Ishaya. You have 14. You speak of almost a half in Job. You have 8,000 in Job.
Say Ishaya's number again. Just double check that.
Ishaya. Yeah. Rabbi, Ishaya. 16,930. Yeah. Speaking about
right.
Both Ishaya.
You have?
16. You expect 16.28. Yeah. You have 43.
Right. I just want to check because you misstated that.
Oh, I'm sorry. 43. What did I say?
14.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Now, Shir HaShirim Rachim Anyen. 1,250 words. You expect 1.2. How many do you think you have? Huh? 14. Ruth. Also interesting. 1,294, you expect 1.24, you have 3. Lamentation. 1,500 roughly, you expect 1.48, you have 6 words. Echa, ma'anyen. Kohelet, you expect, Kohelet, you have 2,987 words. In totality, you expect 2 words, 0.87, you have 4. Esther. 3,045, you expect 2.93. How many you have? What? 8 words. Of course, there's influence in Persian there. Ah, that's very interesting. No. Daniel. And this will finish. Daniel, 2,324. You expect 2.23. You have 3. Ezra and Nehemiah, you have 7,854. You expect 7.5. 55, you have 5. And Chronicles, Divrei Hayamim Aleph and Bet together, you have 24,000 words. You expect 23.3. You have 7.
Daniel, is it
I'm speaking about the Hebrew part of Daniel.
About the Hebrew part in it.
In Daniel.
How does the Yeshua break down between the first and second half?
I don't have it here. I have to look into it. Now, and with this I finish and start with the, we'll start with something. You see, one of the most important things that in the Bible you don't have, statistically, you don't have, as they found in other bulk of literature, one third hapax. You have less. And here is the totality of the Tanakh altogether.
One third that sounds like a number that's impossible.
Which one?
One third of one third.
Well that's different word. That's why they found out. I'm just giving you
many times the same word comes up. But of the different words,
the words that are singular,
right?
Of one third,
of all the different words that are found,
there's
in the book,
50,000 words in there.
There's 80,000 different words. Of the different words,
they're saying 20,000 or 60,000 words can be different words.
Okay, the Bible contains
of the different words.
However, the Bible contains 8,000 words.
No. The words that, right.
different dictionary entries
of that word.
Of the total number of words, of the total number of different words, one third are the only usage in that particular book.
No, but when you have a word like Bereshit 20,000, that's total words. That's
total
not
words.
Singular
that's
words.
That's not
no, total words.
The different words, because there's only 8,000.
Because there's 8,000 words.
So if you can tell me expecting a third, you said Bereshit of 20,000, you're expecting 20 words, and that's 60 words in Bereshit. Is there something wrong with the
rabbi saying
there's
right.
only 8,000 different words?
Well, he said over here, Greenspan, he quotes over here the following statistics of the entire Tanakh. In the entire Tanakh, we have 8,000 words. You have 289 absolute hapaks. That is very important. 289 absolute hapaks. It tested only once. You have 1,179 non-absolute. Which means like Azazel, tested three times, you know, in the same text. And 33, you have ambiguous hapaks legomenon. That really is very difficult to understand. Really is very ambiguous, but it's tested also only once. For a total of 1,501 represent less than one third of the total proportion that they
One third is not one time half-back. It's probably including those other half-backs that appear a few times.
Yes.
They're one third.
That's right.
20%.
I want to continue today with an hapax legomenon that I wrote an article.
Just review that again.
Sure.
So it comes out about 23
million.
Because
he had
1,289.
He
said
about
1,500
out of 8,000.
Right,
out of
8,000. So it's a little less.
Professor, off the cuff, how do you explain
that? We'll do it for next year. Well, next session. I don't want to spend on it. It's very, very difficult. It's very, very difficult.
Right, but one thing you could say without having to go too deep into it is that the more highly literate Nevi'im did use more hapax than the others, and the poetic sections like Tehillim and
Yov, Lamentation.
And Lamentation, they had a much higher.
And Shir HaShirim, of course, is the classics.
Right, the poetic, right. Those are simple things that you could say without going into detail.
Because somebody asked me about why hapax all together occurs. And this is the statistic that I want to share with you today. I want to go today to do something about real hapax, but from the point of view of geography. In other words, what we did last time, we took words and we explained some words were difficult, some words were not difficult, some words showed some stylistic parallelism and so. Today I want to work with you on an article that I wrote, and I want to start with this, about a hapax that is attested in a very, very interesting text. And if I'm right, philologically, I will discuss later on, after this, I will discuss the case, because some people took me into task and some people, some scholars, have supported me, but I am not an historian, so I cannot really comment on the historicity of this. Now, the article that I wrote, it was in JNES, called The Historicity of Two Kings 1924, please. Two Kings 1924. We're going to work on one hapax now for about 15, 20 minutes. Two Kings 1924. Tanakhim, hold on. Do you remember the very famous case of Sanheriv, sent the Rav Shakeh? Sanheriv was sieging in Lachish against two kings, 1924. Sanheriv sent the Rav Shakeh. The Rav Shakeh is an Akkadian, the Rav Shaku, which is in Bereshit, the Sarah Mashkim, Rabbi. The Rav Shakeh most probably, Stadmore said, most probably he was an Israeli, or Israelite, let's say. You see, you have an Israelite, you have Israelians, and you have Israelis. I think that a beautiful distinguished did Professor Ginsburg in his very famous book. on the Second Temple. The Rav Shakeh was a native Jew from Judea that went to the other side, and he spoke Assyrian, Aramaic, as well as Hebrew. He was sent from Lachish to Hezkiyahu, to Yerushalayim, to try to convince Hezkiyahu. It's a very famous, one of the most important cases in propaganda in the ancient Near East, and many scholars wrote about it, to try to succumb, to try not to resist Sennacherib, and of course, something happened there. Remember the very famous miracle and so, but we'll discuss this in a minute. I want to go back to 2 Kings 19:11. No, 2 Kings 19:10. Ko tomrun el Hezkiyahu melech Yehuda. Now mind you, ancient propaganda. He sits in front of the walls of Yerushalayim with a massive army of Sanherib, and he speaks in front to Shevna Sofer, and in a minute you see. Ko tomrun el Hezkiyahu melech Yehuda lemor al yashi'acha Elohecha asher ata boteach bo lemor. לא תינתן ירושלים ביד מלך אשור. הנה אתה שמעת את אשר עשו מלכי אשור לכל הארצות להחרימם, ואתה תינצל? Question mark. הצילו אותם אלוהי הגויים אשר שחטו אבותיי את גוזן ואת חרן ואת רצף ובני עדן אשר בטיל השר. היום מלך חמת ומלך ארפד, ומלך לעיר, ספרוויים, הניע ועיבה. ויקח חזקיהו את הספרים, ספרים means letters, ספרים does not mean books, את הספרים מיד המלאכים, from the messengers, ויקראם ויעל בית אדוני, ויפרסהו חזקיהו לפני אדוני. Good. What is the Rav Shakeh over here praise? He prays the foreign policy of Sennacherib. Nobody is able to stand against the great Idgel, Hanesher HaGadol, Assyria, and you know the symbol of Assyria, it was exactly the same symbol of the United States, the great eagle. In 2 Kings...
You think an apostate Jew would know better than to say this to the Hezkiyahu? It's not impressive that the Jewish people, even in days of Hezkiyahu, were looking down at idolatry. So this type of a statement doesn't sound coming from an apostate Jew.
I don't know if he really converted. I don't know if he became a paganic. I know that he was a guy's hamishi, you know.
In any case, this is not the way to be persuasive to Hezkiyahu. A person who lived near Hezkiyahu would know that this is not the way to be persuasive to him. I'm just commenting.
Right. What do you mean it's not persuasive? Why? What's the difference if it's a Rav Shakeh or somebody else?
No, I'll tell you why. Because a person who doesn't know the culture of the people well might not realize that they look at the gods of the other nations derogatorily. They don't look at it like it's any evidence. Whereas the native-grown people that Hezkiyahu is with, they would know that that's not the way to speak. They would say the God of Israel, the one who took us out of Egypt, so on.
Yeah, well, it's continuous.
To be the lead-off argument that did the gods of the nations accomplish anything, that doesn't sound like it's coming from somebody who knows the culture of Hezkiyahu well. That's all I'm saying.
How do we know
that Rav
Shakeh was of
Israelite
origin?
No, he says we don't know for sure.
We don't know for sure.
But I'm saying it doesn't look like he would speak this way. That's all I'm saying. If he was
kind of persuasive argument,
right?
Let's read a little bit further, Rabbi. I think for your point. Vayitpalel Hezkiyahu lifnei Adonai vayomar Adonai lo Yisrael yoshev akruvim atahu ha-hu ha-elohim levatcha lechol manuchot ha-aretz atah asid ha-shamayin et ha-aretz hate Adonai yuznecha ushma apkach Adonai anecha ura'e ushma adibres anharib אשר שלחו לחרף אלוהים חי. אמנם אדוני החריב, אמנם אדוני החריבו מלכי אשור את הגויים את ארצם, ונתנו את אלוהיהם באש, כי לא אלוהים הם, כי אם מעשה ידי אדם עץ, ואבן ויאבדום. ועתה אמר אלוהים ושענו נם ידו, וידעו כל מלכות הארץ, כי אתה אדוני יהיו אלוהים לבדיך. אני חושב שפה, this is an interpolation of the Deuteronomist, I don't want to go into it, it's not my topic, the Deuteronomist got involved very, very clearly, I could really cut the whole point to see what was the original text and when the Deuteronomist was involved, the editor or the redactor. That's not the point. The point is that the Rav Shaker praises the greatness of Sennacherib from the foreign policy point of view.
He has to deliver some Sennacherib.
Right.
Right. He doesn't write about it.
Right.
He's also rallying his own troops
for
that.
Most probably it was written, yeah, because the Sfarim, I mean, Sfarim, he received, it's very good, he received the Sfarim, which means the rolling egret and so. But the point is, now let's go to another text. In 2 Kings, please be attentive, 2 Kings 19, 22. No. 21. Sanherib melech Ashur, shamati. Ze hadavar asher diber Adonai alav baza lecha la'aga lecha betulat batzion acharecha rosh hini'a betulat Yerushalayim. Beautiful. Et mi herafta bat Yerushalayim? Bat Yerushalayim. Et mi herafta vigdafta. ועל מי ארימות הכל ותישא מרום עיניך על קדוש ישראל? ביד מלאכיך חירפת אדוני ותומר. This is the second speech. This is the quotation of the second speech. In other words, two speeches. I cannot go into the historicity of the text, but two speeches. One speech that the Rav Shaker praises Sanherib for the foreign policy, and the second speech you see, quote, ביד מלאכי חרב ותומר, ותומר, קוואות, מה אמרת? And here's the text. ברוב רכבי אני עליתי מרום הרים, ירקתי לבנון, ואחרות קומת ארזיו, מבחור בראשיו, ואבואה מלון קיצו, יער קרמילו, אני קרתי ושתיתי מים זרים, ואחריף בכף פעמי, כל יאורי מצור. Meaningly, the Rav Shaker praises over here Sennacherib's internal policy. Now, the whole thing stands on one word over here, which I think I clarified, and I'm going to share it with you. ואחריב בכף פעמי כל יאורי מצור. יאורי מצור. Scholars who have dealt with this verse, I want to study this with detail with you because I gave you a lot of material last time. I want to study with detail to show you if a person could really have the crux of Hapax, maybe we could have something else. Scholars who have dealt with this verse encounter two textual problems, a philological and historical geographical one. Philologically, the expression "Maim Zarim," by the way, this text in 1924 is parallel to also in Isaiah 37:25. Parallel. The expression "Maim Zarim," foreign waters, used in 2 Kings 19:24, also Isaiah 37:25. Isaiah 37:25 has only "Maim." It doesn't have "Maim Zarim." The parallel text in Isaiah has been understood by the majority of modern commentators to connote water of foreign lands, waters of strangers, or foreign waters, all of which were presumably the new wells constructed in the country without water to supply the needs of Sennacherib's army. The second and the more crucial textual problem arises from the historical and the geographical enigmas resulting from the use of the word matzor. practically all modern commentators and translators, it's an apax legomenon, who have identified Yore Matzor, the rivers of Matzor, with the Nile. Matzor, Mitzrayim. With the Nile, maintaining that Matzor is a variant for Mitzrayim, Egypt. This theory was initially advocated by David Kimchi, who based his interpretation on the parallel expression Yore Mitzrayim in Ishayahu 7:18, Amos 8:8, Yore Mitzrayim at Matzor. Kimchi said, Yore Matzor, Yore Mitzrayim. The rivers of Egypt. As Calderon rightly pointed out, not a single ancient version acquainted with this uncommon equivalent of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is never called Matzor. Mitzrayim is always called Mitzrayim. Why? Because Mitzrayim is dual. Madua, Ayim is dual. Raglaim, Yadaim, Mitzrayim refers to Upper and Lower Egypt. Never Matzor. Very crucial a problem here. Not satisfied, all related Matzor to the root, some all have related Matzor to the root Tsarar, Tzadik Resh Resh, or Tsur, Tzadik Vav Resh, meaning to press together, to enclose, to surround. Matzor, Latzur. Yore Matzor. Calderon, not satisfied with the widely accepted identification of Matzor with Mitzrayim, Calderon's treatment of the problem suggests it is another example of an eclectic mem with the Norman Regans. Another Yorei, mem, ma, and then he said tsur. You see, the mem of Matzor does not belong to Matzor, but belongs to Yorim. If you remember the eclectic mem that you end to the noun, some, for instance, give you one example, Adirem, Adirim Am in Shoftim, instead of Adirei Am, the enclitic mem. And he wants to say that he renders the expression Yorei Tsur, Yorei Ma Tsur, which really means the mountain stream, the water that comes from the mountain. In a minute. He renders the expression Yore Tsur, the mountain streams, and thus derives his interpretation from the noun Tsur, mountain, rock. Kohler Baumgarten, ignoring the possible identification of Matzor with Mitzrayim, maintains it rather to be Mutzri in Arabia. While their interpretation of biblical Matzor as specific geographical site seems logical, their identification appears historically problematic, for there are no references of an independent Arabian Mutzri in the Neo-Assyrian text, in the time of Neo-Assyria. The accepted identification of Matzor with Mitzrayim generates both orthographical and historical problem. And now you see what we have in mind. The orthographical problem arises from the identification because the interchange of Matzor with Mitzrayim is relatively rare in the Bible. Considering that the fact that Akkadian word for Egypt is Mutzri or Mitzri, Amarna Mitzari, not with the Ayim, only in Hebrew you have the Ayim. And that numerous attestations of Mitzrayim exist in the Bible, of course. One would expect to find the interchange more frequently, Matzor Mitzrayim, but you don't. However, it occurs only 5 times in the Bible. An historical problem arises with the identifier of Matzor with Mitzrayim, since Sennacherib never invaded Egypt.
What occurs 5 times in the Bible?
The word Matzor.
So it's not a half.
No, it's what you call a rare hapax. Yeah. In a minute we'll go to each one of them. It's very good. But you have an historical problem. Sennacherib never invaded Egypt. So why should he praise? And he's in Lachish. So, again, this, we're very careful about this business of Yore. Rather, his son, Esarhaddon, conquered Egypt in 671. 100 years. 671, I mean, 40 years after Sennacherib's invasion to Lachish. So you cannot be Yore Matzor. The purpose of the present paper is to place the Matzor. You see, you're speaking about Matzor as non-frequent hapax, not really real hapax, hapax. It's a difficult word too, remember. The purpose of the paper is to place the biblical Matzor in its appropriate geographical location and thereby to authenticate the historicity and the validity of 2 Kings 19:24, Isaiah 37:25, the parallel text. At the outset, it should be noted that Sennacherib's impiety and arrogance against the Lord, his master, is accounted by Isaiah in a direct quotation. The Rav Shakeh boasts that his master's army is invisible, that he has climbed the heights of Lebanon, that he reached the remotest part, hewing down its loftiest cedars, its best cypress, that he's dug and drunk waters, and that he has dried up all the waters, pools, streams of Matzor. Clearly, Isaiah used the phrase, "Through your envoys you have blessed me, my Lord," declaring, is a direct reference to Rav Shakeh's words. However, for some reason, they were not included in the famous speech given in front of the walls of Jerusalem in 2 Kings 18, 19:25, 27:35, and 19:10-14. Rather, they were recollected and quoted by Isaiah in his prophetic oracle against Assyria, Yad Malachecha, in 2 Kings 18:33-35, and Rav Shakeh boastfully relates his master royal feats of his foreign policy, which we read a few minutes ago about the gods. However, in 2 Kings 19:24, the Rav Shakeh proudly declares Sennacherib's accomplishment in domestic policy. In our opinion, the source of 2 Kings 19:24 emphasizes one of Sennacherib's major domestic royal achievement. The magnificent network of water conduits that he constructed for his new capital, Nineveh. He moved his capital from Kale Nimrod, where his father was, Sargon, to Nineveh. The history of Sennacherib's grand irrigation system for supplying water to Nineveh was described in details by Jacobson and Lloyd. For the present discussion, however, this suffice to briefly the historical development of his royal achievement. 2 years after Sennacherib's accession to the throne, at 703, he declares the construction of the irrigation network of the Kisri Canal as one of the first domestic accomplishments. The accounts can be translated as follows. To make the orchards luxurious, from the border of the town of Kisri to the plain of about Nineveh, through the mountains and hills, with iron pickaxe, I had a canal dug cut straight for distance of 1.5 beru. Kivrat Eretz beru. I caused to flow there in the canal everlasting water from the Kosher River inside those orchards. I made them, the irrigation runs in ditches. Sennacherib, according to Jackson and Lloyd, this canal was, now pay attention, according to Jacobson and Lloyd, this canal, which drew water from the Kosher River, began 10 miles up of the Kosher to Nineveh, indicated that the water supply proved quite satisfactory for some time. But between 700 and 694 BC, however, it became necessary for Sennacherib to increase the water supply of Nineveh. Sennacherib, in his record of domestic improvement and new accomplishment, the palace without rival, written in 694, have this date in mind, 694, repeats the complaint made in his earliest record that the kings in his predecessors neglected the welfare of Nineveh and its water supply. But none among them, my predecessors, had turned his thought nor brought his mind to widen the city area, to build wall, to lay out streets, to dig canal, to set out orchards. But I, Sennacherib, the king of the universe, king of Assyria, gave my thought and brought my mind to accomplish this work according to the commands of the gods. Let me tell you, he was the irrigator par excellence in antiquity. Surely, the Kosher River, yeah. I cannot go into it. I wish I had the map. It's, you know, the Kosher River goes from. I don't want to go into it because I will discuss it in a minute. Surely, he accomplished what he said to do. After giving a detailed account of his building project in general fashion and the construction of his palace without rival, more specifically, some lines further on the inscription, the first irrigation record detailed that in the Kisri canal is repeated. From the inscription we learn that Sennacherib himself, with great difficulty, went on an important expedition to look for possible new sources in order to increase the water supply to Nineveh. And that, indeed, after much hardship, the new water sources were discovered, and the second irrigation account dates 694 BCE and reads as follows. To explore the waters which are in the Mount Mutsri, a mountain, I look the road and climbed with a great difficulty. Aliti Moro Marim, Yarkita Tsepon. I mean, this is a parallel. I mean, what Isaiah does where he recounts, it's, I wish I had the discussed with the Akkadian, but never mind now. Climbed without great difficulty and came to the city of El Munakine. Remember the city. At the head of the cities of Dur Ishtar, Shibaniba, Sulu, I saw streams and enlarged their narrow sources and changed them into spring-fed pools. To give these waters course through the steep mountains, I cut through the difficult places with pickaxe and directed their outflow to the plain of Nineveh. I strengthened their channels. Now, if you remember Yonah a little bit, this is Nineveh. Strengthened their channels, heaping up their banks mountain high, and secured those waters within them as something extra I added to them to the kosher water forever. Sennacherib, third chronicle concerning irrigation of network is recorded in the Bavian inscription, three expeditions, written in 690. So you're speaking 701, 702, 694, 690. Sennacherib's third chronicle concerning his irrigation network is recorded in the Bavian inscription written in 690. This inscription creates a vast and elaborate picture of his new irrigation undertaking, which was in both its type and dimension unique in the history of the ancient Near East. Apart from the Mount Mutsri, I have a map later on I'm going to show, apart from the Mount Mutsri operation, the Bavian inscription describes the following undertaking. Excavation of 8 canals joined the kosher. By the way, there were kanats, which means an underground. 2, the canalization of the lower part of the kosher from the Kisr of Nineveh, the Kosher River and Kisri River, which brought the water to Nineveh. 3, irrigation of Nineveh and planting parks and orchards. 4, park and orchards. In a minute, I'll go to the biblical text. 4, the construction of the new canal from Mount Tass. From the Bavian inscription, we further learn that Sennacherib's personal interest in technology surpassed that of any his predecessor. Boastful of his elaborate irrigation system, he even accuses the local inhabitants who turn their eyes heavenward to the shower to rain of being ignorant of artificial methods of irrigation. The opening section of the Bavian inscription reads as follows. Its field, which through lack of water had fallen into neglect, literally ruin, and while its people ignorant of artificial irrigation, turned their eyes heavenwards for showers of rain. I watered, these fields I watered, I, Sennacherib. And from the villages of 18 canals, I dug 18 canals, directed their course into the Kosher River, from the border of the town of Kisri to the midst of Nineveh, I dug a canal, those waters I caused to flow therein, Sennacherib Channel, I call them. Ta'alat Sennacherib. To complete this picture, Sennacherib irrigation efforts, we should include an account of the Jeruan copies text by Jacobson and Lloyd as follows. Sennacherib, king of the world, king of Assyria, says, quote, for long distance, adding to the waters of the town of Hazur River, namely waters of the river of Palupulia and waters of the town of Gamayara, I caused canals to dug the meadows of Nineveh. Over deep cut ravines I spanned, literally caused the sea bridge of white stones black. Those waters I caused to pass over upon it. In one of Sennacherib's last historical records, the Temple of the New Year's Festival, Bitakiti, he describes himself as the creator of irrigation network par excellence. Although this self-description might be read as only a literary cliché, in Sennacherib's case, his actual achievement justifies this description. Quote, who digs canals, open wells, runs irrigation ditches, who furnish waters for irrigation to Assyria's method, engineering, literally digging, and construction such as none has seen in Assyria in days of old. None had known of those kings who preceded. None made. This astounding succession, I'm going to mature in a minute, this astounding succession of hydraulic engineering, an incomparable irrigation network from 703 to 690 BC, by which Sennacherib transformed the barren environment of his new capital Nineveh into a garden of almost paradisic fertility, where Anatabrat Kishat Nishi, in Akkadian, to the astonishment of all the nations. Ani aliti meho arim matzor. To whole nation, wow! What is it? The Empire State Building, the Tour of Eiffel, the greatest achievement in the world. Anatabrat Nishi. Thus, we can safely assume that such unparalleled record, you see the text in Ishayahu and this, Ani aliti meho arim, architect of the astonishment of the nation. Thus, he can safely assume that such an unparalleled record of achievement might find their proper echoes in 2 Kings 1924. The Rav Shakeh, proud of his master's great domestic accomplishments, find it suitable to mention Sennacherib's much praised irrigation undertaking. More specifically, Ani Karti, Veshatiti, Maim Zarim, Vahriv Bechav Pa'amai, Kol Yore Matzor, refers historically to Sennacherib. Second outstanding account, the Mount Mutsri operation, dated in 690. Just to say something short, Ani Karti Veshatiti Maim Zarim. Maim Zarim is no good, has to be Meizerim, flowing water. And Maim Zarim, foreign water. Mutsri was within. The proper Mutsri was within proper Assyria. So Yishayahu is Maim. Melachim is Maim Zarim. Has to be Maim Zarim, has to be Me Zerim. Flowing water. And I have all big footnotes on it. I am not going to do it. So the business of Matsur. Regardless of the prevailing theories on historical as well as geographical evidence, we would like to suggest an identification of biblical Matzor in 2 Kings 1924 in Isaiah 37:25 with a more appropriate Mesopotamian geographical site, Shadeh Mutsri. Shadeh means mountain in Akkadian, and Mutsri is Mutsri. Shadu, I don't know if Shadai is from there, it's problematic, but anyhow, Shadu Hmm? Maybe. Mount Mutsuri. That is to say that Akkadian Namba'u. Namba'u. Anybody Hebrew? Mabu'emain. Akkadian Namba'u. You see, I didn't quote you the Akkadian text of Sennacherib's second Mutsuri. Akkadian Namba'u. Water spring, stream. Akkadian Namba'u is employed from the middle. I have a whole footnote in Namba'u. Maybe I'm going to make a Zirak Shapi for next time for you, just to have it at home. You should remember me. We see, Namba'u water spring, which Sennacherib found, Amur, Amaru means to look, to found, at the foot of Mount Mutsuri are the historical and geographical equivalent of biblical Yoreh Matzor. They say Namba'u, Mabu'ay Mayim, this is Yoreh Matzor. The water pool stream of Mount Matzor, located, here is the location, northeast of Nineveh, even though the water streams at the foot of Mount Mutsuri are already known from the description of Sargon, to be his father, to be Asrim of Nineveh, at that time I built the city by, okay, what Sargon said, Jerusalem. Sennacherib was the one to utilize these springs for the irrigation of Nineveh. It should be observed that in the land of Mutsuri, was conquered by the Assyrian in the 12th century. In other words, it's not outside of Assyria by Ashurdan. When Mutsuri appears again in the Sargonic period, his father, Sargon the Great, which we know from the Tanakh, the one who destroyed Israel in 721 period, the region is already an integral part of Assyria proper. However, during Sargon's and Sennacherib's reign, which overlaps Isaiah and Micah's time, the reference seems to be to the Mount Er Shadeh Mutsuri, Mount Mutsuri. Thus, accordingly, according to Jacobson and Lloyd, Mount Mutsuri is known as modern mountain of Jabal Bashika. Excavation in Tel Billah near Bashika has therefore established beyond doubt that this tell covers the ancient cities of Shibaniba. Therefore, we may expect to find the town of Ella Makini, Dur Ishtar, Sulu, Shibaniba, very important cities in the order in Micah in a minute, which are mentioned in Sennacherib's Second Irrigation Chronicle. The Mount Mutsuri operation in 694 is in the vicinities of Tel Billah. Furthermore, according to Jacobson and Lloyd, we know that Shibaniba, Dur Ishtar, Sulu were situated on the mountain stream of the foot of Mount Mutsuri, which carries waters all the year. In short, the historical geographic account of Sennacherib's Second Irrigation Chronicle, dated from 694, the Mount Mutsuri operation is recorded in 2 Kings, 1924, Isaiah, may be rendered as follows. I have dug and drunk flowing water, May Zerem. I have drained with the sole of my feet, which means he describes how he went on the mountain. I have all footnotes here, all the stream of the mount of Matsur, all the footnotes for each word here. Now, we're going to the crunch. In the light of the sea suggestion, now I want to see Zapax, or difficult words attested here and somewhere else, from here we could really may extrapolate something in something in history. First of all, it's very, very clear the word of the Rav Shakeh is really praising the internal policy, the exterior policy of Sennacherib is really bringing the water. And this is the greatest achievement of Sennacherib, is the irrigation that he did. In the light of this identification of Hebrew Matzor with the Mesopotamian geographical site Shadeh Mutsuri, we should like to touch briefly on the crucial, historical problem of Sennacherib campaign in Palestine. Did Sennacherib invade Palestine once or twice? This is the most difficult debate among scholars who deal with the campaign of Sennacherib into Canaan, into Israel, into Judah. Once or twice? I did not take any stand, as you see. I got out of it very, very.
What's
Sennacherib? You know, I'm a Tzimtzum, Ma'ayisli, Kol Azeh. San Chariv, I'm speaking about your Rematzor, it was 694. In a minute, you'll see.
It's a geographical location of what we're talking about today.
I have the map over here. I'm going to give you the map in a minute to see.
They're bombing it right
down. Yeah, they're bombing it right down. As we're speaking, yeah. Absolutely.
I just wanted to, is Tachti, is that an Akkadian, or is that a Hebrew? Because you mentioned the word.
Karti is kara, no, it's a Hebrew word, absolutely Hebrew, kara, kafreshe, which means to dig. It's very poetic for havar.
With a kof.
Yeah.
So the point is that the Irish name of Karti really comes from the company of Karti, because when the Spanish had the invasion of Ireland in 14, whatever it was, a lot of the navigators, the captains of the ships, was a Jewish tradition amongst the Spanish. They were Jewish, obviously. So when they landed there, they're known as Black Irish, and they took on, they retained the name Kakti, because basically, we're talking about Kakti, still in Israel, a very popular name. It became McCarthy. So if we think of quintessential Irish, Jewish
Arabs. Very interesting.
But Karti with a kof.
Yeah, it's Karti with a kof. Yes, it's really both. It's Karti with, I know, Kara, Baelka Ruah, Ro'im, Hafaruan, Livi'am, Hukam Shondam. And Karti with some Kur Kara also means to dig. To dig really, to dig to the source. That's why you have the Hebrew Makor from this, the source of water. And meaning we're getting to a very, very crucial problem here. We should like to touch briefly on the crucial historical problem of Sennacherib's campaign in Palestine. The account of the Assyrian invasion against Hezekiah presents a difficult problem. Does our account contain the record of one military campaign or two? As Bivaj S. Childs pointed out, few problems within the Old Testament, quote, within the Old Testament have evoked such a steady stream of monographs and articles, believe me, you don't know how many. Until I wrote this, I had to go into history, which is not my field, and monograph and articles as has account of the Assyrian invasion of Palestine. Because the first king that invaded Judah, not the first king that invaded Palestine. It has become a classic issue on which each new generation of biblical scholars seems constrained to test its mettle. Indeed, an impasse, unquote, indeed an impasse appears to have been reached. The historical evidence which is needed to understand the actual historical sequence of events appear to be unbelievable. John Bright, the very famous historian, in the second edition of History of Israel, likewise admits, without any consensus, having been arrived at concerning the historical problem, it is probable that none will be, short of the discovery of fresh extra-biblical evidence, say Sennacherib official annals for approximately the last decade of his reign, if such exists. Presently, our goal is not to enter into details of this complex debate. Rather, we wish to summarize the biblical accounts and the two major interpretation theories concerning these accounts, and finally provide our own view. I'm not going to summarize the account, but I'm going to tell you short, because I don't have much time. There are two campaigns. One campaign is on 701. Scholars...
Are you taking a position?
In a minute, I think. I'm not taking a position, I'm suggesting something, I'm not taking a position, but I'm suggesting something that some historian says, for instance, Chaim Tadmor says there was one campaign, but my point of your Rematzor, okay, the Mount Mutri operation, here is my conclusion. The Mount Mutri operation with Sennacherib's a second irrigation complex was recorded is dated of the month of Ab in Akkadian, in the Emphony of Ilu Itiya, the governor of Damascus, in the summer of 694 BC. This prism concerned, this prism contained two military campaigns against Sicilia in 694 and then in 695. The concluding section, which occupies nearly half of the text, and Ramsam or Limus and anyhow, be it as it may, we can reasonably infer that since the prism was written in 694, we know it from Achaean sources, we know everything there in cuneiform, and since the Mount Muzio operation definitely took place between 700 and 694, probably towards the end of this period, that the Rafshakeh boastful reference to Sennacherib Mount Mutsri irrigation network as recorded 2 Kings 1924 could have occurred prior, could not have occurred prior to 700. Thus, the Mount Mutsri operation could have been mentioned by the Rafshakeh only following 694 BC, probably during the second invasion in 689, 688. Accordingly,
because we already established that Masur wasn't irrigated earlier. Why?
Here's the point, Rabbi.
The reason you're saying that it couldn't occur.
Here's the point, Rabbi. The invasion of Sennacherib to Canaan with Lachish campaign, it was 701. Mm-hmm. If my identification of Yore Matsur is correct, it cannot be in 701.
Because it was only built after that.
Oh, 694. Right. 694, you can be there.
Maybe
an anachronism. No anachronism. Everybody knows the campaign, you know, the chronology of the Assyrians, no anachronism. It's very, very clear. You had 701 campaign through bring water, 700, then 694 campaign is 690. But, you know, you could look at Bright and you see.
And 7 years off.
Yeah.
7 years over a period of 2,600 years.
Okay, accordingly, for our identification of biblical Yore Matsur with Mesopotamian Namba'u Mabu'e, Shashepi Mutsri, Hamabu'i Mashele Raglei Ahar Matsur, the water spring or stream or the foot of Mount Mutsri, is correct, the mention of Mount Mutsri operation by Rafshakeh in 2 Kings 1924 may strengthen the historicity of the account and further evidence for those who advocated the theory of Sennacherib's second campaign against Hiskiyahu in 689, 688 BCE. On the other hand, for scholars who consider the second account as late prophetic story, the telescope events, 2 Kings 1924, Isaiah 37, 25, the month... What?
That's what anachronism is, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Telescope fact.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not evading it. The Mount Mutsri operation should obviously be constructed as follows. The magnificent system of Mount Mutsri was known to the writer or the compiler after the completion of 694 BCE. He then, many years after the event, recorded this monumental construction by skillfully telescoping in the Rafshakeh speech, written with the intention to minimize the importance of Sennacherib's glorified domestic royal accomplishment of transforming the barren area of Nineveh into paradise on earth. I did my job. I've suggested something which is very, very logical. Within
what do you mean at the last? What's minimizing his accomplishment?
In other words, you don't have the whole speech.
Right.
You have really part of the speech. Anik Karti, by the way,
right.
let me reveal something to you, which is, I'm going to go into it. Let me reveal something to you, which is really a secret, but I'm going to do it. Anik, take a look again, in UTET 23. Why did Sennacherib had those irrigation campaigns, the great glory irrigation campaigns to Nineveh? Sennacherib has the most important royal garden, the botanical garden of antiquity. If you're speaking about any garden of botany, it's Sennacherib. אני קרתי ושתיתי ביד מלאכי אותה. אני עליתי, ואתה אומר, ברוב רכבי אני עליתי מרום הרים ירקתי לבנון, ואחרות קומת הרזב נבחור בראשיו, ואבו המלון קיצו יער כרמילו. מה זה ואבו המלון קיצו יער כרמילו? He did all the water irrigation system from Mount Mutsri to Nineveh 10 miles in Kanat. Underwater system. I wish I could study with you the annals of Sennacherib. Why the annals of the Neo-Assyrian kings reveal so much in the Tanakh? What does it mean, Rabbi? Aliti berov rechbi, I know. You go to the mountains, you see, this is what. Yarkete Lebanon, the outmost remotest area of Lebanon, Echrot Komat Razav, the statue of his beautiful cedars, Mifchor Beroshav, Va'avoa Melon Kitzo, the regular translation means, and I came to the outmost lodge, Yar Carmelo, the Yar of Lebanon's Carmel means flourishing place. Doesn't work for me. Here is my emendation.
Because that would be the extent of the Assyrian Empire reaching into Lebanon,
no. Okay. Yeah, Lebanon was incorporated to Assyria, there's no problem.
Right, so would be
but here's my imitation. When he brought the water to Nineveh, he bought it not only for supplying water to Nineveh, as Nahum would say, remember, about you know the very famous outburst of the water of Nineveh that had destroyed the entire city. He brought the water for the irrigation of his beautiful botanical royal gardens, and we have an account how the gardens was cultivated. And here is my emendation. Not really a great emendation, tikkun, watch. Va'echrot komat arazav mifchor beroshav, and this is within the realm of what I spoke of Mount Mutsri. Va'avi'a melon kitzi. Yar Carmeli. And I brought the water to my summer house, Bitan Ginata Melech, Melona Kai, Yar Carmeli, my flourished garden. Huh? In Dinbe. Oh, what a garden. What? From Mount Mutsri. So he speaks va'avoa, not va'avoa, but va'avia. You see, ani karti v'shatiti maim zarim v'chaf pa'amai v'achrib kol yom matzur. Ani aliti zez va'avia, hivia, gam in ha'broshim. What did he do with the broshim? He built the broshim el milon kitzo to build his very famous summer palace. Yar Carmelo, which the summer palace was within the royal garden.
But he says here the Avoa, not the Avia.
The Dead Sea Scrolls has the Avia.
What was that again?
Yeah, the Dead Sea Scrolls has Va Avia. And it's not a big deal, you know. Va Avoa, Va Avia, the Vav are interchangeable, the Vav in the Yud 100 times, the Kreen Ktiv. And then they came and just vocalized like this, did not understand. And Mazi Milon Kitso has to be Milon Kaitz, Bet Kaitz. The very famous Bet Kaitz, the Bet Ahoref of Amos. And I don't want to go into it, believe me. This is unbelievable. That's what he did when he brought.
He brought the trees for wood?
Yes, to build his very famous summer palace. The Bitanu. The Bitanu Melech. The Bitan Ginata Melech.
Out of wood?
The Apadana. Yes, out of the cedar woods. Out of the cedar woods of Sennacherib, I mean of Lebanon.
Does it make sense for the Haber of the
do it anachronistically, to put it as a quote of a speech from, doesn't make sense to make it part of a speech, because a speech, they're going to have some sort of record of a speech.
But I'm not saying this is the actual speech. I'm saying this is a quotation of a, I bet, and you know as well as I do, that when the Rav Shakesh stood in front of the walls, Al tedaber el avadecha, you know, I mean, this speech was long, you know, this is, but we don't have everything, we have part of it.
We don't have everything, but to put something so...
No, he glorified, that's what I started to say. In the beginning, he glorified his foreign policy. Here is glorified his domestic policy. The domestic policy, the Mount Musa operation of bringing water to Nineveh. Why water to Nineveh? Why the
but why would the Mechaber want to glorify it? The person who's writing this, putting this down, and say, if you want to say it's only one campaign, and we want to say that...
I said two campaigns.
No, but you brought also a shita that there's only one campaign, and the people one campaign are writing after the fact, they put in
if.
The...
If.
Right, but what does it make sense for them to want to do so?
No, they glorify only to say, glorify. This is what you said, and this is what you were thinking.
But there's a good deal of sentimentality.
In other words, when you criticize them, they're successful.
Glorify them a little bit more.
No, when you quote them, you let them speak of their words, and you let them glorify themselves. You let them, because their downfall is coming.
The Chabad is glorifying them intentionally through their own words, and they show the greatness of their greatness.
It's letting their speech glorifying themselves speak for themselves.
So they have a fool of grace.
Right, exactly.
But does that mean that it is accurate?
You like Matzor there better as Mitzrayim? Gezun. I like the whole feeling of the whole thing really reflects an accurate second campaign to Mount Musi 694. It's so, if I could really re-study this with Indo-Assyrian, you know, terminologies of, you know, I didn't go, I just wanted to do the Matzor. You know, the whole idea of cutting the trees, you know, there are so many like this. You know, a dictionary will come, we have all the material there. This is absolutely effect. By the way, in Isaiah, most probably Isaiah was an emissary. Isaiah, some scholars say, was an emissary of Hezekiah. He was the foreign minister of Hezekiah. They traveled all over for all negotiations. Isaiah comes to Hezekiah and says, what do you show merodach bal adam et bet nechotcha, you know, bet nikut, bet nakmat, bet love? What is it? What are you doing? How are you? And there are few scholars today, among them is myself, that we have collected many evidence of Isaiah's vocabulary, which really reflects an Assyrian technical terminologies and foreign policies translated into Hebrew. Good. Let us go now for continue. You have mine there instead of mine Zarim. You could compare yourself. Okay, let us go to Isaiah 2:16. Maybe you understand why Isaiah has more hapax than anybody, relatively. What? I don't know. Let's go to Isaiah. Let's go to Isaiah 2:16. Yeshayahu. 2:16. Hapax legomenon, which really hapax, it tested only once, and absolutely hapax in 2:16, which is very, very much clarified by the Ugaritic text now, not by the Akkadian, by the Ugaritic text, and it says like this: remember, ba'al kol migdal gavoa, ba'al kol choma betzura, ba'al kol oriot tarshish, ba'al kol schiyot hachemda. Chiyot Hamda is from absolutely, it's from Ugaritic, and it is a parallel, a text in Ugaritic, very interesting text of Ugaritic that speaks in CTA 84, that speaks about the following.
doesn't say Meron Kisor in
Yisrael. It's Meron. But you know, Rabbi, that the Le Menara interchangeable.
I prefer
Milon Kisor. And by the way, I prove it very strongly in my writing, you know. Milon Kitsi Yar Karmili. You see the Apadana, which means the summer home, which was in the midst of the royal garden, was integral part of the architecture and the horticulture. You know, it's like in Jardin des Tuileries, you could see it very clearly. I mean, you have the beautiful, or in Versailles, the beautiful summer house. Within Amos says Beta Kaitz and Beta Horef, and Beta Kaitz is of course he speaks about why do you think that Isabel wanted to kill what's his name? Mishulma, Mishul Hatchat Gan. She built for her there a summer palace, and this is the reflection. Nobody realizes. You know, not even Shalom Paul in his last book on Amos, no, they didn't realize, speaking about the Bayit HaGadol and the Bayit HaKatan, Melon HaKaitz and Melon HaChoref, which is the Bayit HaKatan, the Melon HaKaitz, the Bayit HaGadol is the palace in Samaria and the palace in Israel. And this is also in Akkadian Ekal Tur, which means Ekal Sehru. I don't want to go... Which equals Bitanu. What do you want more than this, Rabbi? Bitanu Melech Ekal Sehru. The small, Abayit HaKatan. That's Melon Kitsi. Yeah. No, Malon means a dwelling place. From the word Loon, a dwelling place. Does not mean, you know, the Hilton or something. So, we have a very interesting text in Ugaritic, and I think... with which parallel to Thau, Kaf, Taf, which this is Chia. Which really originally it's not even a shin, it's a thou. In other words, what we have in Paulism over here, which is absolutely hapax legomenon, we're always speaking about schiot, something which is beautiful. No! What you have in Yeshayahu, you have oniot tarshish, and then you have schiot ahemda. What do you have there is very, very clear case of a generic term, oniot. Generic term on yod, often klali, which with a specific sechiyot, sechiyot ahamda, thakitu, which really means a sheep in Ugaritic, and it's parallel to on yod and sechiyot. You see a term, with generic term corresponds to a specific term. It is very, very clear as far as this hapax legomenon, it's clear. Sechiyot is a Canaanite word that is tested only in Isaiah and also only in Ugaritic. Please, Isaiah 19:3. Yes, sir. Particular type of sheep, we don't know. Particular type of sheep, this is what you call a generic term, onias, yeah. You see, in Bible, usually, in the pair of palazim, you have the generic term first, and the specific, like Maim, Maim Rabim, Arazim, Arze Alvanon, and so on and so forth, you know.
Oniot is a Hebrew word.
Oniot is a Hebrew word, yes. Okay. Yes, it's attested Ma'amarna and Anyatu is no problem, because in Akkadian, the word is Eliptu, and anybody who knows Aramaic, Eliptu, anyone in Aramaic, no, this is Ilpa in Aramaic. In Aramaic, ilpa means a boat.
Mm-hmm. The word is hot in Hebrew, with head, and then it connects.
No.
Between.
Saha? No.
No,
this is absolutely a half, not a head.
No connection
at all.
And then mask.
Huh? It's nothing to do with it. nothing to do with maskit and schiyot. They mix it up. You see, זה מה שכתב טוב סיני, where ביטויים שנולדו מתוך טעות. Here is Sakitu, it's Potos in Iksau, the road already seen. You know why schiyot is very interesting from the point of view of the vocalization here? I'm just throwing it out because I'm thinking loud with you. Why do you have a sin and a shin in here, and sin and a samech in Hebrew? No, the division of shibolet and sibolet, for instance. Why do you have the sin and the samech? But why do you have to have two characters for the same sound? Why? Yes, the sin becomes samech in Aramaic, we know it. You know, I dealt with it in my article of salaf and chalaf and whatnot. But why? Now the whole idea of sibolet, nobody knows what sibolet. Some people guess, and maybe here is also the case, that sibolet used to be sibolet. Kosher things, but it's not sure. That the Bnei Ephraim used to say sibolet. And maybe the schiot over here, I'm just throwing it to you, maybe schiot over here really reflects a proto-Semitic tongue. I don't know. Be it as it may, the mere fact that you have oniot and schiot in Ugaritic, it's very, very clearly in the list.
So why is there Samach
in the scene? You have two characters, which is Sin and Samach. Right. In Hebrew, you don't know the difference.
So what's the reason for that?
Some people say that the reason of the Sin originally was a Thau.
Right. And just later, it was the
but it's so... Yeah. Yeah. But originally, it was... It merged, the Shin and the Thau merged. But originally, some people say that originally the Sin represented the Thau, the original Thau. The Shin does not represent the original Thau. The Sin was the original Thau.
So why is it the Shin is a matter of Mishorah? It isn't so much...
What?
The Sin and the Shin is a matter of Mishorah. For example, the Samaritans only have Shur, they don't have any...
Well, in the Bible you have Sin and Shin, Rabbi.
What?
In the Bible...
That's
Barak Mishorah. What do you
mean Mishorah?
I mean, in translation, the Septuagint
is preserved.
The Shin and the Sin?
Yeah. The differences?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. What?
Sabbath in the Septuagint.
For Shabbat?
Yeah. I don't think we find any differences between the Shin and the Sin as we translate the Septuagint.
But it's very clearly you're the Shin and the Sin together. What do you mean our Rashbam? Our
don't have it.
Yeah, but our Masorah reflects some ancient. Of course, you know. I mean, if you have Sachalu the Sin, Sachalu the Samech, or Hadli Adashini. I don't know. I just throw it out. I don't want to throw the whole. We're not sure. It's very, very difficult. But clearly, if you have Oniyot and Sechiyot, and you have to consider this, by the way, it's among other type of sheep, like Bar, sheep of Mahadu, the sheep of a city of called Mahadu, Bar, a Bar sheep of whatever, it has something to do. Now, let us go to Isaiah 19:3. I want to give you as much material as I can, because otherwise you're not going to get it somewhere else. You should be Dershu Ela Elilim Ve'el Ha. Isaiah 19:3. Somebody wants to read? Please. Yeah. Well, this is absolutely Hapax Legomenon Itim. The Itim is Hapax Legomenon. And here is Isaiah again with his Hapax somehow. The influence of his on Assyria again. I didn't really even went to it. I just trying to develop here. See, in Assyria, this is a regular Akkadian word. That is many, many times. Is the regular Akkadian etimu, with a tet, by the way, Let me give you an example. Ilani, the gods. Ukabit. Ani mchaberet ha'ilim. Ukabit. I respect the gods. Etemi. Aplach.
It's like
I revered the spirit of the gods, I revered, I honored rather, ukabid, ma'amar kabatu, et ha'ilim, achabed et ha'ilim, ve'eflah, if you want, apalah, palahu, ve'eflah, in fear, the spirits of the dead. Etemu, in Akkadian, means the spirit of the dead. So it's very, very good over here. Ve'dershu el ha'ilim, ve'el ha'itim, ve'el ha'ovot, ve'el ha'ilidonim. You have ilanu, you have etemu. But Yishayahu already elaborate in Ovot and Yedonim, you get the spirit of the dead. And you remember the very famous case of Shaul, Baalat Be'endov, you know. Yeah? Yeah, but this is the Hebrew Etzem. The Taf is the Tzadik in Hebrew. There's nothing to do with it.
No, with the Tet.
With the Tet, yes. Adam, which is with the Tet. Is the equivalent of Hebrew Eitzel.
That means the dead.
Yes. And this is from here, from Isaiah. The spirit of the dead.
Spirit of the dead.
Right. This is from here. Yes. The Aleph is integral part. Aleph is the Aleph Tet Mem. This is the root. And this is Etemu. And he has Itim. In Hebrew, you Hebrewize it, of course. What?
What's the word for spirit that we have written?
Spirit of the dead. The spirit of the dead, not just
this
the spirit.
It might be a little bit of a chiasmus from Devarim when it says that the Shoel Obi Deoni the Doresh El Hametim.
Shadow.
The Shoel Obi Deoni.
Excellent.
Yes.
Over here, it's just. Hetim. Over here, there you use the generic term.
Hametim. And this is.
Beseda. Very good. Here is used a generic term metim, which means the spirit of, not metim really, means the spirit of the dead.
Right.
And over here, he, I,
what
is
Doresh El Hametim anyway? Doresh El Hametim.
To try to.
Not the spirit of the metim. They're seeking something out.
It's right. Yeah.
It was also.
No, Doresh El Hametim is Doresh El Ruach Hametim, Mashu Kazi.
I mean, what are they being Doresh?
Yeah. To inquire, to ask, to
right.
You
know, it's the spirit also.
It's absolutely so.
Is that the same as Neshama?
It's very good. In other words, Itim, if you compare the Isaiah text to Dvarim, Itim really parallels Metim in the generic term. But Itim over here is in the specific term, the spirit of the dead. And of course, it's a Hapax Legomenon, and Isaiah knows it. Very, very well. Now, let us go to Ezekiel, the one that I love so much. Ezekiel is the crazy one. The crazy, not in the sense of being crazy, but Mishuga Isha Ruach, the ecstatic one. And we have there a tremendous amount of Hapax Legomenon. And you know why? Because here it's very clear. Because Ezekiel lived in Babylon, and most probably borrowed many Babylonian, in the Neo-Babylonian period. He was born there, you know, he was came to Babylon, the exile of Yehoyachin, and we have there a real mine of realia. And so I want you to go to Ezekiel 16:30. And we'll do this, and what time should I finish? Oh, I mean, they're getting tired on me. Somebody wants to read it. Ezekiel what? 16:30. Alright. Could you tell me what it means? No 30 in Ezekiel? No, Ezekiel 16:30, yeah. 16 is Tet Zayin. No, your Zayin is 17. Tet Zayin. What? 30. I become there, huh? All right, here I'm going to give you 30. ותרבי את תזנונייך אל ארץ כנען כסדימה, וגם בזאת לא שבעת. Which means? Rage.
Right.
לא, זה משהו אחר. ללבב זה נתו רייג'. רייג' מינס כעס גדול. ליבפיניה. Yeah, but this is a denominator from Labat S. Means to get some, to ignite somebody. Nothing to do with this.
Inflame.
Libatu is the regular rage. And Amula, I'm gonna write you the Akkadian. Ilum, you know what Ilum is by now, gods, the gods, you're either Ilani or Ilu. Ilum. Libatika.